This is the West Coast Project Podcast for Mr. Robot, episode 108. Jimmy, what's the title?
Okay, so the title is...
White Rose.
Yes, White Rose. And I actually have the file format name. The file format is M4V, and that is... it's a file format that's actually originally developed by Apple, which I think is good. It's very similar to the MP4 format, but it's an optionally be protected by DRM copy protection. And so I have something to say about that, about the file format, once we get into the episode, because I think it's kind of appropriate that that they use this particular Apple format. But I'll tell you about it when we get into
the episode. Well, I'll give a secret about the magic of our technology, Jamie. We use Skype, and I use a program, and I have Apple. Everything I have is Apple. So I use a program for Skype called Call Recorder. And it records in a movie format. Of course, there's no video on our Skype. I guess there could be. Maybe that's why they do it that way. But it records it in M4V, and then there you use a movie converter to switch it over to whatever GarageBand likes, and then GarageBand kicks it out.
Hey, did you and Kamal talk about any of that kind of stuff? Because you know he's a videographer.
No, not the technical stuff.
You know, he's an Apple dude, too. Everything he uses is Apple.
Yeah, you sound that almost, you say that almost pejoratively.
No, I'm kind of bilingual when it comes to those things. I have some Apple products and I have some PC type products, but my main computer and my laptop are both PC.
You're a Commodore girl.
Okay, if you want to put it like
that. What was that? That was a little glitch on your computer.
No.
It wasn't my computer. My nice Apple computer.
No, I don't think I had a glitch. I made a sound.
All right, Jimmy, we're calling this 107. It's really season one, episode 8. So I'm calling it 108, I guess. It's really episode 8, EPS 1.7, by the cardinal numeric way that Sam Ishmael likes to number his. I don't know if that's cardinal or what, where you start with 0 instead of 1.
I'm not sure, but I know that is the way that you would number things in almost anything except the way that we refer to it, that scientific numbering and everything. And in actuality, it's really cool and appropriate to the show because, you know, everything in computer language is based in binary, which is 2 digits and it's ones and zeros.
Right.
So it's kind of, yeah.
So, Jamie, because I've been slacking, I don't have any good notes. I'm going to let you run this. But I do have one comment to start out.
Sure.
This show uses the Pixies song, Where Is My Mind, as kind of their theme. And when we bumper, our bumper music coming in is, it's usually that Pixies on the piano, Where Is My Mind. And and coming out, sometimes it's that, and sometimes it's other music, if other music's used in the episode. Mm-hmm. But the Pixies... that song has been used in some other stuff. It was used in a Leftovers episode, The Leftovers. If you ever watched that show,
never.
Which was very unusual. I'm like, wow, have I been using the wrong bumper music for our whole Mr. Robot? Because I heard it on The Leftovers, and I thought, oh shit, I've been using the wrong. But no, they also used it on their season 2 episode 3. And then I just found out, I think this is true, that it was used in Fight Club. It's a song used in Fight Club.
Really?
I think so. I may be wrong about that part. I was getting that from a comment somewhere. But are you familiar with the song, the Pixie song?
No, I just know it from the bumper music because I'm really weird and specific about what I listen to. So I've got my groups that I like, and I don't really venture too far away from those. But let me look this up.
It's really haunting on the piano. It's kind of different in the Pixies song. I'll play a little bit of it here, and then I'll put it on the end bumper at the end of the podcast. But here's a little bit of it.
Stop.
I-
So that might sound a little familiar. It sounds quite different on the piano.
Actually, that song, Where's My Mind, is actually associated with Fight Club. It was used in Fight Club, and it's kind of awesome because, you know, Elliot has pretty much lost his mind. So the song is appropriate for both the movie and the TV show.
Yeah, so it's Sam Esmail, I guess, liked Fight Club, and of course Fight Club, the whole theme of Mr. Robot is kind of structured around the theme of Fight Club. Although, hopefully that's not spoiling people. At this point, several months after the show's ended and we're behind and we're on the eighth episode. And you've seen them all now too, Jamie, so I'm not spoiling you either.
You are not. You texted me probably 2 weeks ago and said, here's what you need to do. Watch them all so we can do spoilers in between.
Yeah. So what the one at the point I said that was either episode 6 or 7. It was when Mr. Robot was talking to Darlene, and I was going to say to you, isn't it more likely that Mr. Robot would talk to his children more than other people?
Okay, so you didn't say exactly that. I think that's what you wanted to say, and you told me to make a note and tell you later, remind you now in episode 8, and tell you, and I actually have that note.
That's what I couldn't say.
Right.
Because you didn't know for sure that they were brother and sister, and right. You know, you didn't know for sure who Mr. Robot was, although we pretty much thought we knew for sure.
Yeah, exactly. And so I have that note. It says, remind Mike to tell me about the scene in the bar with Mr. Robot.
All right, Jamie, so you've seen them all. We're at number 8. What do you got from White Rose? I'm going to let you take the handlebars.
All right. So I hope that you remember some of it, because this was something you asked me to do literally 5 minutes ago. So I'm used to following in the, in the passenger seat, but I'm going to try to run it in the driver's seat. So here we go. The show opens the first scene is I think it's Darlene. Yeah, the show opens with Darlene standing on a balcony looking over the city. And you don't really know it's her, actually, because you only see her from behind. And it's this really fancy apartment. And this guy walks out who we don't recognize, and he kind of grabs her. And you know that it's an intimate exchange between the two of them. She's looking out of their city. It looks like she's spent the night. And he's obviously a guy who's well-to-do. And, you know, he's talking to her in the morning, and he's saying, you know, I'm gonna stay, and, you know, that kind of conversation. And then it kind of, because of something that Darlene says, it turns into something kind of political. And he says, you know, she's talking about wealth and, you know, people who don't have. And the guy says, well, you know, there's the haves and the have-nots, and then there's you who's in between. And, you know, he says, this conversation's too heavy for the morning. I got to go. We agreed last time we hooked up that we weren't going to talk about this kind of stuff. And then he leaves. And Darlene goes into the apartment after he leaves, and she goes up to his safe, and she's trying, you know, codes to try to get into the safe. And being the hacker extraordinaire that she is, she tries to stop and think for a moment of something that might be a passcode for him, because she can't figure out what it is. And then she sees his diploma above the mantle there, above the safe. And then she realizes maybe it's something really simple like that, the way that people commonly think of and construct passwords, and it works. It's like his graduation year and some, you know, I think that's like, it's something, the 4-digit code. And so she gets into his safe, and she steals a gun. She puts it into her bag, and she takes it with her on the subway, and she's going somewhere. And we don't know yet where she's going, but she's actually going to her ballet class. But in the meantime, she's got this gun, and she's on the train, and we don't know why she has the gun. But we find out momentarily why she's afraid and why she's carrying the gun, because she's sitting on the train. And there are two guys, kind of, you know, Asian kind of looking guys, not sure what country or where, you know, and they're standing kind of away from her, but they're looking directly at her and kind of exchanging glances with each other. And then they get up and walk over directly to her and stand right there in front of her. And she unzips the bag And she has it, you know, on her lap, and she sticks her hand in the bag, and you know what she's doing. She puts her hand on the gun. She's like ready for them. And then they say something. And I'm going to tell you in a second what they say. They say, the guys say, one of them says to the other one, tell him to follow the proper commands and the sequence will initiate. So, and then they just walk away. And actually, the first two times I saw that episode, I didn't realize that what the guys were saying was tied to anything important. I wasn't sure who they were. But now I know, and I figure that they're the guys from Dark Army, right?
Yeah, I think so. They're in White Rose's gang or entourage or whatever.
Right. And so that message, I think, was for Darlene to give to Elliot.
So what did you think of the ballet class? What did you think of the connection between Darlene and Angela?
Okay, so that blew my mind.
Did you remember at the time that they were, or did you, I mean, I kind of thought, I'm trying to think back if I even remembered this, that they hadn't really crossed paths before this. Didn't know about them crossing paths.
We had no clue. We had no clue. And so when Darlene walked in to the ballet class and we see Angela on the phone and having this conversation with Ollie and what she said, what Angela said to Ollie in the ballet class, she said, I don't care, Ollie, who you ran into or what he said. And then that's when Darlene is walking in. And so when Angela hangs up the phone, Darlene starts talking to Angela as though she knows her. And that's our first moment of going, I mean, it was one of those double take moments. And
yeah, mouth what? Talking. You've been going to this class together for a long time?
Exactly. Like they actually know each other. And that was for me, that moment was like, oh my God, I think this might actually be Elliot's sister. Like for me, it was like, I was thinking about myself, like, oh, I might be right. So, you know, they start talking to each other and it's clear that they know each other very well. And then of course, then the topic of Elliot comes up and, Angela says something about Elliot, and she's just kind of like, you know, he hasn't been himself in the last month, which kind of recalls that episode, the crazy drying out episode where he got clean. And Angela, in his hallucination, when she was wearing the wedding dress and giving him back the key, and she said, you've only been around for a month. Like you were born a month ago or something like that. This is the same kind of reference here that occurs actually more than once in this episode where Angela or someone refers to Elliot as having had a weird month. And so Angela said he's been weird the last month. And Darlene said he's had a shitty month or 20 years. And so, which was kind of funny and deadpan and perfect for Darlene to say. So, you know, basically, for somebody who's seen the end of the series, the end of the season, which I have and you have, and hopefully everyone else has, this is a reference to Elliot not being okay like his entire life.
Yeah, because why wouldn't Elliot know Darlene if he's, or what? I'm sorry, why wouldn't Elliot know Angela? Or wait, let me get this right. Yeah, why wouldn't Elliot know
Darlene?
Well, he's their brother and sister.
Right, but
so he wouldn't know her.
He doesn't know her.
I know, but so why wouldn't he? Yeah, and why wouldn't he know if Angela's been his friend his whole life, and Angela and Darlene are friends? That's another connection to Darlene.
Right. That's
why
right.
wouldn't he? You know, he's just blocking that out.
Yeah. Yeah. He's crazy.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Also, Darlene wearing black and Angela wearing white in the
yeah, it's just, you know, I have to tell you, I've been doing some reading about this. Okay, so we'll tell our audience. I'm going to tell our audience this. I have been sort of out of commission. Like our little podcast has been sort of lumbering along the last 2 weeks because Mike has been extremely busy and traveling, and I have had surgery, and so I've been kind of like insane because I go to school full time and I work full time, and I've got projects. Like major life-changing projects on both fronts for school and for work that are finishing right now. So I've been just completely distracted, and Mike has been distracted, and so everything has kind of been crazy. But but here we are, and that's why we're late. So that's my excuse to you guys. But so
it's okay. Nobody cares.
Maybe not, Mike. I don't know.
We know what, we got nothing to apologize for.
All right. So we get to the next scene anyway, and the next scene is Elliot in his apartment. He's looking at this painting, and I don't know if you remember seeing it, but it was this huge like painting on his wall, right? And it's of a field, like almost like a wheat field, I think, with a fence and like a house or a barn or something in the distance. And there's a figure like at the fence, kind of looking off into the distance, and we only see the back of the figure, and it's a hooded figure. It's like wearing like a black hoodie with the hood like pulled over its head, just like Elliot. So it's kind of bizarrely, you know, appropriate to, you know, and metaphorical about its setting. So it was an interesting scene. But Elliot's doing a voiceover in that scene, and he says that he's talking about Krista. And he's saying that what he did to her last episode, which we talked about extensively, it was, I think it was the most impressive thing I've ever seen on television, as far as, you know, bearing the truth about something, or, you know, bringing, you know, like a touch of reality into a fictional reality. It was just amazing to me. And he's talking about that in this moment. He says that, that he basically eviscerated Krista, and he asks us if we're angry at him for what he did. And I kind of am, even though he's talking to his imaginary friend. You know, we're the audience and we're there. And I was really, I didn't like what he did. I thought it was awful, but fantastic, because for as far as entertainment goes, it was amazing.
So you didn't like, well, he deletes Krista's file.
Well, yeah, and he's talking about it before he actually sits down to the computer and does that. He's talking while he's looking at the painting, and he says, Krista, he's talking about Krista, and he says, Krista's too afraid to peek over the wall. She's like everyone else. She's too afraid to peek over the wall for fear of what she might see.
Right.
And then he says, I'm not. That's not like me. That's what I do. I look.
I like Krista.
I like Krista, too.
Yeah. I don't know. I like Krista. Mm-hmm. She'd be a cool woman to hang out with.
Well, okay, so I don't know about hanging out, because Krista seems to have her head on really straight.
You'd have to get her talking. You'd have to get her to put to break down that facade of like that cool, calm, stone-eyed, stone-faced facade. You know, once you get her talking, once you got her to like reveal a little bit about herself, I think she'd be pretty cool.
Oh, he said Krista with a bottle of wine in her would be amazing.
Yeah.
Okay, so so Elliot sits down at his computer and deletes Krista, and then he has his computer screen up, and it shows the Airdream Advanced Metering sort of promo website. And Airdream Advanced Metering is built is a building automation system that that Airdream sells. And this is important because Airdream is, of course, the company that controls the air and the automation for the Stone Mountain, or what is it called? Steel Mountain facility.
Yeah, it's the thermostat deal where the controls send everything back to the servers and stuff. The thermostat that Elliot put the Raspberry Pi behind.
Right, exactly. Okay, so what it is the music. That this episode has two pieces of classical music in it. And one of them is a piano concerto, which is the one that we're going to talk about right now. And then the other one is an operatic piece. And both of them are actually composed by Mozart. And the first one starts in the ballet class, right? And then it goes into the scene with Elliot that we're talking about now. And it's Mozart's Piano Concerto number 20 in D minor. And this one is really, really meaningful. And this is the thing that makes me think that Sam Esmail is a genius, and that this show, I mean, honestly, I feel like everybody should watch, you know, if they love a show, they should watch the episodes repeatedly and look up everything they can look up about them, because this is what I found when I looked up this concerto. This particular piece of music, Mozart's father was so proud of this and so impressed with this composition that he wrote to Mozart's sister about its excellence. So there you have Mr. Robot and Elliot and his sister.
Oh, that's pretty cool.
Yeah, isn't it though? I'm awesome, right? I looked that up.
Yeah, good research.
Thank you. And so, okay, so then we go to the scene that you're talking about where Mobley's there and Elliot is talking about what he did, where he, you know, went in and started to monitor these things on the, was AirSafe? The AirSafe website. So he hacked them and Airdream. And he's looking at their metering, and he's figured out that everything is synchronized, that it all, what did Mobley say? He said that, yeah, all of their thermostats phone home on the same network. So if everything is on the same network, it's really easy to control everything that they have.
Right. You find your way into one, you've got the whole thing.
That's exactly right. That's exactly right. And so there's the plan. And I think this is part of the next scene, maybe, because Tyrell has done this awful thing that he did in episode 7, where he murdered Knowles's wife, right? And so he's coming into the building, and he looks really uncomfortable and sweaty and gross and just very guilty, right? He's coming into the building, and he's walking, and he looks kind of crazed, and he runs into someone, like, well, actually, somebody runs into him with a coffee, and he screams at the person and yells at them and, you know, berates them and then moves on, gets up to his floor. He's going into his office, and there's his assistant. And she meets him and says, Mr. Wellick, someone's in your office. And he's, I don't want to see anybody. And she says, oh, but it's, you know, it's Gideon from AllSafe. And so Tyrell goes in. Gideon says, you know, we've been hacked, but we did a honeypot. And Tyrell looks discomfited by this revelation. And he shouldn't, but he does. And so, you know, you're thinking, you know, why? And so, you know, Gideon does his best to sort of, you know, sell the whole thing. He says, you know, we're monitoring it, we're on it. And then Tyrell says, let me know. Because it's like server CS30, I think is the name of the server. Yeah, so that's the one where the honeypot is. And that's what Gideon says. And so Tyrell says, he takes note of that, and he says, let me know if there's any activity on server CS30, right? And so then Gideon leaves. And Tyrell puts in his earbuds, and he's playing this classical music, and he starts to do his hacky thing, right? And the piece of music that is playing is the Magic Flute, which is also by Mozart. It's an opera. And the idea about the Magic Flute is that the flute turns sorrow into joy when it's played. And it's a really interesting choice as a piece of music. Once again, the genius of Sam Esmail, because the plot of this opera is that there's a handsome prince who's lost in a distant land. And I think that's kind of an analogy to Tyrell, because it's a religion-themed opera that features child spirits and a beautiful woman the protagonist loves. And it's about enlightenment. And the protagonist's wife believes that her husband has abandoned her. And that's a theme that kind of plays throughout this episode. And the child spirit, of course, because his wife lost a child. She had a child that she gave up, right? And also because Tyrell, you know, comes home later and he's all freaked out and he's got this religious epiphany that he's experiencing. And so that if you know the theme of this opera, it really, really is appropriate for him to be listening to at this point in time. So I thought that was fascinating.
Did you like Tyrell's arc in this whole series?
I actually really loved it. I thought it was one of the most impressive and detailed and sort of metaphorically rich character arcs.
Yeah, I don't know how much I liked it, because I don't like how Tyrell starts to erode away at this point.
Well, I mean, he has to come undone.
I know. I guess that's part of the drama, right? His tragedy is he's the failed prince. He can't ascend to the position he wants. He can't please the woman that he's married to. He's just kind of a failure, even though he's super successful in maybe societal terms. He's kind of inside. He's just fading away.
Well, I mean, you know, if you think about the opera and if you think about, you know, the experiences that his character, you know, has had in the series, you're exactly right. You know, it's, you know, and even to the extent that at the end of this episode, we're not quite certain what his fate is. That also has something to do with the opera. It's about defeating death and, you know, that kind of thing. It's fascinating. I would recommend that our audience go and read like a Wikipedia page on the Magic Flute or something. But yeah, I mean, you're right. He kind of, you know, comes undone, which is fascinating to me because, you know, Elliot is already undone when we enter the series. You know, we see him kind of wake up to reality. And in fact, this episode is the first real, I think, glimpse of actual reality unvarnished, you know, and obscured that we actually see as an audience. The thing about computers and technology, and particularly information technology, is that it is only as secure as a person can think to protect it. And that's the real vulnerability with any sort of a system, right? And if any information system, even if it were analog and not digital, the only way that you can protect something like that is to the extent that you can think of a solution to protect it. And so that's how hackers work. They work around people's assumptions. You know, I mean, think about what Darlene did with his password. Any hacker knows, you know, typical passwords. And even if they don't, and you've seen Elliot do this in the series, where if he doesn't know someone's password, he can sort of kind of try to guess it based on things that he knows about the person. You know, not just specifics about what their dog's name is or something, but also what kind of person they are. Judging their personality and whether they would choose a complex or a simple password, you know, serves hackers. And so, yes, I mean, that's possible because, like, for example, let's say you have a network that you're trying to protect, right? You may have software involved in that network, something installed like you're using Microsoft Office, and maybe you have some sort of cloud storage, and maybe you have, like, you know, third-party software that you have installed on it that you use, okay? So if you have any sort of anything that is an addition to your network that makes it more open, it's a vulnerability. So let's pretend like it's Gmail. If you have a hacker who knows something specific about Gmail and the way that it's structured and where its security holes are, because everything has a security hole, everything. And most things have many security holes. If you know where those holes are, you can use Gmail to hack a network that would be otherwise considered secure. And that's why you have testing, like, you know, user acceptance testing, and you have security testing, and you have things like Tripwire and all that stuff that kind of looks for vulnerabilities in a system, because you cannot possibly calculate how many opportunities there are to hack something, and all you have to do as a hacker is find one.
Yeah. I'm going to go back to something we talked about an episode or two ago, even though it's been a long time ago now, that I think this show is a little bit overcomplicated, because I think people are ready to buy in and just accept the fact that, like, okay, Snowden-y type stuff, I assume it can happen. I believe it. I don't need to know all the ins and outs and details, because I'm really interested in, like, the human drama. like the people part of it. You know, like the power moves of Tyrell trying to get a strive for his position as CTO and his wife and the moving in on Knowles and the Knowles' wife and all that. That's the real interesting part to me. The little taste of technology is cool and it makes it kind of interesting, and it's, you know, Mr. Robot's the name of the frickin' series, so it's got technology like stamped all over it. But I think it's almost overly complicated because people don't need to know that much detail. And probably, I mean, I'm sure a lot of technical people love to watch Mr. Robot, but I bet it's less than 10% of the people that get all of these ins and outs of like the networks and the safety protocols and, you know what I'm saying? They're not all like you, where you work day in and day out on computers and you write computer white papers and you consult to people about computers. Most people are just normal people.
Okay, so yes, I think you're right about that. But I think that this show is really kind of genius about separating those things because there's so much story there. I mean, honestly, okay, so I just started thinking about this in this way when I was preparing for this episode because I was doing some reading about, you know, the music and some background stuff and all that. I mean, seriously, this show does it so well because it gives you, if you don't want to look at any of the extra stuff, you don't want to look at any of the technological stuff and the, you know, and the detail and, you know, that IT kind of stuff, you don't have to. This show stands on its own as a story. You could just watch it and not know anything about computers and be perfectly happy and enjoy the show. It's great as it is. But the extra stuff that's there is there for people who are seeking that, who are looking for that, because it's not anywhere.
I think it turns some people away. I think it makes some people think, wow, this stuff's just way over my head. I'm not going to get it. And they stop trying. And I think a lot of people gave up on the show because of that.
I don't know. I mean, you may be right. I don't know because it's interesting to me. So I can't really, you know, I can't really comment because, like, even if I were watching it not as a podcaster, if I were just watching and I weren't, as much of an IT person as I am, I would still enjoy it and I would look at some of the things and catch some of the things and think, oh, that's awesome. Oh, they did this, or, you know, they're talking about Linux, or, you know, whatever it is. I would be impressed with those things, but I may even not go as far in my thought process as I do now, you know, as a person who has my interests and my career and that kind of stuff. It's fascinating. It's really fascinating to me. So I don't know. I'm not bothered by it.
So maybe this is jumping ahead of, you know, more than your recap is ready for. But why do you think so many people were so impressed with this guy BD Wong being cast as White Rose? Why do you think that was such a big deal?
No clue, because I haven't read anything about it, so I don't know. I don't even know who BD Wong is. So let me look him up. But in the meantime, Mr. Robot. Okay.
He played in Mr. Butterfly. On a Broadway production, Mr. Butterfly.
Madam Butterfly?
Yeah, I'm sorry, Madam Butterfly.
Oh, well,
Mr. Butterfly. Mr. Robot's on my head, sorry.
I thought, oh, that dude. Okay, so I thought that there was a piece of music earlier in the season that was from Madam Butterfly, and it wasn't, but I thought it was, so it's kind of interesting that that happened. In Butterfly, yeah. Okay, so his Broadway debut in Butterfly opposite John Lithgow won multiple awards, so I guess they're probably impressed because of his acting. He's a very highly decorated, sort of awarded actor. He's won a Tony and a Drama Desk Award, an Outer Critics Circle Award, a Clarence Derwent Award, a Theater World Award, for that role in Butterfly. And so he's also been on Law and Order. And so apparently he's like a really, really good actor. And he's worked with people like Stephen Sondheim. Apparently he's really experienced, and so probably it's a coup to have gotten an actor of his caliber to be on the show.
So I think the strategy in the authorship of this series is that this Dark Army now is being set up to play a pretty big part in season two. We're jumping ahead a little bit with spoilers that we saw in episode 10, but don't you kind of think that? Or if you only saw this episode and it stopped after watching this episode, that they're the Dark Army's into this a little bit more than just being an entity that can help them reach into the China servers and get the data erased that they need from those servers.
Well, yes, and I think that the amuse-bouche for that was kind of handed to us by the dialogue between Elliot and what is it, Dark China? With the guy, because at the end of the conversation, when the timer actually goes off, he is saying, that's his question. His question is, why are you helping us? Why do you want to do this hack? And so I think that's a really perfect way for the audience to start to question. He's basically given us the question that we need to ask and that we should want to have answered.
Yeah, and they start to make a pretty strong connection to time. Like,
yes.
White Rose says, every hacker has their fixation. You hack people. I hack time.
Well, yeah, she said, your fixation is people minus time.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So you have 50 hours, 23 minutes, and when all parties are ready, we'll initiate the hack. So he's like, it's all connected to some sort of a time slant that him and his Dark Army are placing as way more important than people or data. It's like the, I don't know, I don't get it yet, but it's opening the door, I think, to season two that makes it, I'm like, we're ready to see a lot more about Dark Army in season two.
Yeah, I think you're right. I haven't seen any of the previews or anything for season two, but I think you're right. I think that that's something that we should expect, and particularly the way that this episode ends, episode 10 ends. So we should expect that this is going to be a main feature of season two.
So jumping, like, you may, I don't know how far ahead, if you have more to fill in, but now Tyrell and Mr. Robot end up knowing each other?
Huh, that was so crazy. Okay, so I don't know where that is in this episode. Is that before the Elliot and Darlene reveal, or is it after? I think it's after.
I don't remember, but that was super interesting that those two guys, how the hell do those two guys know each other? Who would have thought that they knew each other?
Okay, so let's do the let's do that scene because I think that's beforehand. So that weirded me out because at the time, I didn't know, you know, everything. And so when I saw the scene between the two of them, I was like, okay, so Mr. Robot knows Tyrell. Like, how does that even work? And it kind of blew my mind. And, you know, Mr. Robot is a lot more assertive than Elliot is in some instances. It's almost like he's less refined because Elliot can be very assertive, but he's always refined in his approach. And Mr. Robot is really not. He's almost like the id version of Elliot, right? And so, you know, he's in the car and he basically threatens this dude and he very smartly reminds him, there's no percentage in you exposing me. It's going to be much better for you if you just get along with me. And you'll see that if you think about it, you know, kind of thing. And then gets out of the car really dismissively and leaves. And, you know, then Tyrell is left sitting there kind of like frustrated. You know, this dude's right. You know,
did you ever think Tyrell's just another figment of Elliot, though?
Well, okay. So if you think about the series and the way that we have sort of, you know, I've evolved in my understanding as the season's gone on, I originally thought that that Tyrell might be Elliot, like that they might be the same person. And then I kind of evolved over to thinking that maybe Tyrell was in love with Elliot, just based on that whole thing of him wanting him to come and work for E-Corp and that kind of stuff. And so I was really never sure where to place Tyrell in this whole drama. And I'm still really not sure, you know, what the deal is with him because, you know, at the end of episode 10, I really thought that Tyrell was dead.
And so if Tyrell killed Noel's wife, and he's a figment of Elliot. Did Elliot kill Noel's wife? Is that asking too much of the audience? Is that too much of a stretch?
I think that Tyrell has to be himself, but I don't know for sure, because here's the thing. The thing is that in, I can't remember which episode it is, it may be episode 10, Elliot runs into Joanna, Tyrell's wife, and he's asking where Tyrell is. And she doesn't really know how to take him. And she says, kind of weirdly, slowly, kind of carefully, kind of like she's not sure why he's asking. She says, well, I haven't seen Tyrell in 2 days or whatever the amount of time is. And then she starts speaking to him in Swedish, which is like, I guess that's where they're from. I'm sorry. I forget if it's Sweden or Switzerland or which country it is. But
yeah, so that would make Elliot married to that chick.
Right, and but she starts speaking to him in Swedish. And so why would she do that? And then Elliot kind of shakes his head like he doesn't recognize what she's saying, and then she switches right back into English. And so it would kind of lend itself to the idea that maybe, you know, maybe Elliot is Tyrell. I don't know.
Yeah, it's weird. There was a lot of weird, twisty stuff in this one. Like Tyrell says he knows damaging stuff about Mr. Robot. And then Mr. Robot tells him, well, that won't help anyone, so just keep quiet about it. It almost means that Mr. Robot could be real, could have been a real guy. I don't know. It's like there were so many twists in this, it was hard to keep them all separate and straight.
Certainly. Yeah, I mean, you know, the whole thing is left me kind of scratching my head. But there, you know, one thing that I feel really certain of is that Mr. Robot is not real, that he is dead, you know, that he was Elliot's father, and that he is dead.
Yeah, well, we do see a photo of Mr. Robot with the mom and with Elliot.
Actually, okay, so we see a bunch of photos, and you're talking about the moment where Elliot goes in and hacks himself, right? And then he realizes that he's nowhere on the internet, right?
Yeah.
And, okay, so that's what you're talking about. So this is after the reveal of Elliot to Darlene, or Darlene to Elliot, really. And so here's what she says in this scene. She says, you did this. This was you. And then she says, you are seriously the best person I know. Do you know that? I love you so much. And then that's that scene where you were telling me, like, from a few episodes ago, like, remember what Shayla says when she says, next time, don't ask. Right? So this
right.
is the moment where Elliot's like, okay, I'm not going to ask. And he just goes in. And then you get, you know, Darlene saying, what the f***, Elliot? Oh, my God. Did you forget again? Did you forget who I am? And then Elliot's looking at her like, what is she talking about? And he's like, forget what? And then she says, tell me right now, who do you think I am, Elliot? And he says, you're Darlene. You're Darlene. And she says, Elliot. And he says, you're Darlene. And she says, I'm your. And he says in his head, he says, I know what she's about to say. Sister.
Yeah.
And then he says, you're my sister.
Well, this is kind of the whole problem of why this stuff is so mysterious. Because you can think you're onto it, like, oh, I'm onto this now. I got it figured out. But this is all filtered through Elliot, who's like a whack job. So
right.
Is he remembering correctly? Is he fantasizing? Is he drug-induced? Is he, like, psychotic? You know,
okay,
the unreliable narrator is, like, it's pretty convenient for Ismail in his storytelling, but it's really tough for us as viewers to figure, like, do we count on this, or do we wait for more clues?
Okay, so the thing for me is that I have decided I'm not mad at Sam Esmail, because his story is beautifully constructed, and there really are there are rules in his universe. Like, we talked about this a bunch of times during the season, and my one thing was, I can go along with this, I can follow it, it can be crazy from this perspective where I am right now, as long as the universe has rules and the rules are followed, right? Well, he's done that beautifully. He really has done it beautifully, because this is the first episode where we really see reality for what it is, where the veil is lifted, where things are clear and the truth is happening, right? And we see it. And, you know, what we see actually follows, because Darlene, with all her insane behavior and breaking in and doing all the stuff that she does and violating Elliot's boundaries, you would do that if you were someone's sister. You know, if you were just some stranger who just met, you know, you'd be somebody who would get the police called on you. But if you're his sister, then it makes sense, you know?
So do you think the little girl, that little girl with the telephone pole in the middle of the vacant lot, do you think that was Darlene?
That was Darlene. And the reason why I know that is because when she says this to him and he says, "You're my sister," he hoods and he leaves, and Darlene is crying, and then Elliot is having all these crazy flashback moments, and he's saying all these phrases. Oh, how could I forget her? How could she's a whole person? How could I forget a whole relationship? And she and I used to sleep in the same bed when our mom was mean to us, and you know. And then he says something about the kid on the scooter. She used to ride her scooter in their neighborhood.
Don't pound your microphone.
Oh, sorry, I'm pounding the table with my fingers. But, okay, so she was the kid on the scooter in his hallucination that he had when he was detoxing from the drugs that he took. So we know now.
Yeah.
You know, it's solved.
Well, Ismail even says that reality isn't, you know, drugs and stuff, of course, can't always be accurate. But even reality isn't accurate. Like, if you think of you know, people catfishing each other and Ponzi schemes and Bernie Madoff and all that, you know, things that people perceive as being real and true. Sometimes in the real life, they are fake outs. You know, they're duality that isn't really, that isn't true. It's all facade.
That's right. That's right. And so he's having all these sort of, you know, these realizations, right? And then you see these flashes of Daddy, right? And of the Monopoly Man. And then Elliot says he's like urging himself to see himself. And he goes and looks in the mirror. And then he says, "We have to hack me." Right? So
right.
He's hacking himself. He's not finding himself. There's nothing on Elliot. No identity. And then he says, "I'm a ghost." And then he says, "Did I erase myself?" And then he goes into his CD booklet. And he finds the blank one, the last one in the back. And he loads it, and then there's Daddy. And the first image that happens is it's Mr. Robot in front of a Jesus statue imitating the crucifixion pose. And then later on, this is a really cool thing, because actually that episode, I didn't get to talk about this, but I had already looked it up and I knew about it. So when I saw it in this one, I was really surprised and delighted. In the photos, there's an image of Mr. Robot reading to Elliot this book by an author named E.L. Konigsberg. The book is titled From the Mixed Up Files of Mrs. Basil E. Frankweiler, right?
Okay.
It's a famous book that won a Newbery Award. And in the dinner party episode, where Elliot and Angela are sitting out kind of on the balcony and they're reminiscing about their childhood and talking about the time that they ran away to the Met. This is the theme of this book. The actual plot of the book is about these two characters who had a grand scheme to run away to the Met. And there's an old lady who is kind of like a patron of the Met, and she takes them in, these two kids who ran away from their homes. And then they end up having these adventures, you know, through her and that kind of thing. And that is what Elliot and Angela are reminiscing about, because this was one of their favorite books that they read as a child, and they acted out the book by running away from home for real and running to the Met, or trying to. And they went to the wrong place. They didn't go to the Metropolitan Opera. I mean, the Metropolitan Museum of Art, which is where they were supposed to go. They ended up going somewhere else.
The Mets game? Shea Stadium.
No, it was like that their home place. But I thought that was awesome, you know, that callback was there, because this was several episodes ago, and it was just a flash, you know, and if I hadn't paused my screen and recognized the author from my research before, then I would never have gotten that little bit of information, but it was a great touch.
Yeah, I mean, you're... So if I remember, Jamie, correctly, you liked this because you were texting me along the way as you were catching up on the series episodes. You liked this one in number 9, but then you kind of declined on number 10.
No, actually, I loved 8. I loved 8 so much, and I did not enjoy 9, and I thought 10 sucked ass.
Yeah. So, you didn't like the way it ended and left everything because it didn't have the resolution or what?
Yeah.
Or maybe we should wait till we get to that one.
Yeah, we can talk about it when we get there. There were a bunch of reasons I didn't like it. I was really disappointed in those last 2 episodes, but this one was the apex for me. I loved it. I think it was the best episode of the season. It was great.
Okay. Well, let's call this one a wrap for 208 or 108. Here, let's call it the right damn name. I gotta look at my notes here. Episode E7 EPS. I'm sorry, E8 EPS 1.7 White Rose M4V. Mm-hmm. The Pixies. So here are the Pixies playing on our way out. So Jamie, this is West Coast Project, and we will talk again for E9 EPS 1.8. How do they end this, by the way? They end on 1.9, huh? That's weird. 9 is the last one. 1.9.
Okay, so in the numbering is kind of weird, because this one, if you look at it, it's like 1.7, but it's actually episode 8 because it started on 0. So the next episode is going to be 1.8, and then, but it's really episode 9, and then the last one is 1.9, but it's really episode 10.
All right, Jamie, so that episode next time is 1.8 mirroring.qt. That's a mysterious one. So I'll talk to you at that point. How do people reach you if they want to email you or Twitter you?
Well, I'm on Twitter, and I'm at WordGirly.
All right, and I'm at ScathingTweets. So we'll talk to you after 1.8 mirroring, or before 1.8 mirroring. Okay, Jamie, I'll see you then.
All right, awesome, Mike. Bye.